Slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Be told you never saw them in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straight in the curve.
The Shooting Bench is making some major changes. Starting the 1st of August, the Shooting Bench is only going to be on 3 days a week. 3 days? Well, not to worry. I'm going to take a couple of days off and you get an extra hour of listening time. Catch the Shooting Bench now at its regular time on Monday and Wednesday, but for 2 hours. The second hour on Wednesday will be all gun talk, outdoor stuff. Your extra hour comes in on Friday, where we start at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 Eastern, and run for 3 hours. An hour to catch up on news and current events, and Liberty Lounge at its regular time, join me for the shooting bench right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
I'm a good old boy. You know my mama loved me. But you don't understand. They keep on showing my hands and not my face on TV.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. All righty, here we are. It's Monday. Welcome to the Shooting Bench, 15th of August. Hope you guys had a great weekend. We had a my weekend was not as romantic as Amy's. I was working most of the time. If I wasn't over there cleaning up after horses and building a shed and working on the shelter for the horses and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, it was okay. I had fun doing it. And went to spend a little time in town doing some radio stuff for some friends of mine and working on the sheriff's campaign a little bit. It's getting Graham Harbold's opponent is getting pretty naughty with her.
And I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, there's going to be. There is going to be. I guarantee you. But, his opponent's getting pretty snotty with her campaign there. It's dragging a bunch of people down with her. So, hopefully this will be over soon and put it behind us. Anyway, now, something happened yesterday that was most unappetizing. And that is I had to do a factory reset on my phone. My phone is my life. Without my phone, I am dead. I am useless. I can't do anything. And everything, all that. So, it's been a very traumatizing experience here, a traumatic experience. But the worst part about it is most of my information for the show is on my phone. And now it's all gone. So we're going to muddle through this best we can. We're going to get some other things, kind of a mixture of stuff here. So we'll see how it turns out. Yeah, there's always, of course, I usually have about at least 5 or 10 minutes to get ready for the show, and I squandered my 5 or 10 minutes today and didn't even check because I was so traumatized by having to reset my phone. Yeah, Mini Min Pin, when you do a factory reset, that means it goes back to square one. It goes back to just like it was the day that they pulled it off the shelf at Verizon. and everything needs to be redone. Everything. Now, understand, read my lips. That means every single thing has to be redone. So, I'm not liking it. But I'll have to say, with some of the backup stuff that they have and everything, it could have been a lot worse. I still need to work on some of my contacts, and I got my texting, my secure texting apps and all that stuff back in business, and email and everything, and that's the most important thing. But like as I said, I lost everything that I was that I do for the show. It works out good for me with the phone, because the phone's big enough that I can bring up stories and kind of go through it while I'm keeping an eye on the chat and stuff. So if I don't do that, then I can't watch the chat. So anyway, like I said, we're going to muddle through this tonight. We're going to see how it comes out. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things, some good, some not so good, a little bit of gun stuff, and we'll see how it all turns out. The first thing here that I think is most amusing, short story, it is that Jack in the Box has had its fifth armed robbery since it had. Remember when they had all the stuff going on earlier in the spring, or maybe it was in the winter, it was last winter, I think, where Sonic asked people not to go, Starbucks, they didn't come out and say no guns allowed. They were trying to be nice in their own silly kind of way. And Starbucks said, well, we'd rather you not bring guns. Sonic said, well, you know, we don't really want guns here either. And Jack in the Box didn't come out and say it in so many words, but they said, well, you know, we don't really like guns, you know, on the property and all that. We'd rather you just, like, leave them somewhere at home in a car. Something like that. Several other companies did that. Of course, there's other ones that just come right out and said, no guns, period. Don't say no guns, no money. That's fine. I have no problem with that. Well, Jack in the Box has had their fifth armed robbery in that short period of time since they asked people to disarm before they come on the property. And that's a very, very fitting story there. You know, this one, I don't like stories like this because it is so, so much against my beliefs, and it's against God's law, it's against man's law, it's against everything that is right, good, holy, and has any kind of value at all. It's not the first story that's come up like this. Matter of fact, right here on the show, I think it's the second that we've done like this. But this is comes out of New Mexico there, C7 radio doc. It's a mother and her son faced jail time for having this burning desire to be with each other forever and ever. Amen. She's 36. He's 19. They're back in court here not too long ago when police learned that they there was another thing going on near their home. And they found out that Caleb, the boy's name there, or man, I guess, he's 19 years old, admitted to having sexual relations with his mother, Monica, who he knows to be his biological mother. There was a no-contact order issued, and mother and son made a court appearance in March after that was violated. I guess they are just so much in love that the court order doesn't matter. The kid said even if they're jailed, that they will be together again someday. So, there you have it. Very, very, yeah, I don't see what Doc won. I was looking at that myself. She's not appealing in any way. You know, you've got to be. Surely you can see if someone is, a handsome couple, drop dead gorgeous. Not that it makes it right. It's not in any remote stretch of the imagination. Not trying to justify it whatsoever. But at least you could kind of see the point, see their views there. But the mother is not drop dead gorgeous. Pretty much she's drop dead ugly, is the best I can figure. So I'm not sure what the attraction is there that they need to go to all this trouble to be together. There are other ways to do that, I think, from what I hear. Okay, well, that's enough of that. We don't need to spend a lot of time on that. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Now, Ronald Reagan, I said we're going to be bouncing around here, and I was not kidding, okay? Ronald Reagan knew what it was like to handle, how to handle protesters. He had it figured out. He was the president of the United States, and he acted like one. And our current president could probably take a little, couple of lessons from Ronnie. Let me bring this up here. I thought it would come up faster than that, but well, maybe not. No, it's the thought that counts. We may get it yet here.
They were going to physically destroy the university.
Now, why did you negotiate many times?
Negotiate? What is to negotiate? What is?
University is a public institution.
That's right. But the university,
its own community, and for the community of Berkeley that live around it.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
There are cities in Michigan. Oh, shut up.
Yeah, I miss Ronnie. I really do. He was a good hand. Oh, shut up. All right, now my Firefox. Now, by the way, for some of you that have listened to me and paid heed to some of the things that I've talked about with secure communications and stuff like that, I just found out that you can put Signal on your desktop. It's not strictly a phone app. Now, it is strictly phone for if you want to have it as your default texting app client and talk to both people on and off of Signal. If you have it on your desktop through Chrome, you can only talk to other Signal users via Wi-Fi. But that's okay, because the majority of the people that I care about talking about most are on Signal. So, still got a few we kind of trying to bring up the rear here, but that's all right. We're getting them one at a time here. All right. Every once in a while, I find an exceptionally good thing of Mark Dice or one of those guys that go out and interview people on the street and ask them questions that any fourth grader should be able to answer very, proficiently or efficiently or correctly. Well, these college kids right here, not so much. They didn't quite. I think they missed a few years of school, actually a few years of life, trying to get through college here. And just like our Ronald Reagan video, we're having the same problems here. but we're going to keep at it until we get it to come. All right, now pay attention. You may have to turn your sound up just a little bit.
Hello, everyone. I'm Courtney Plunk with Polytech. We're here on our home campus at Texas Tech to see just how much our fellow students know about their country. Who won the Civil War?
Who won the Civil War?
We did? The South?
Like the one in 1965 or what Civil War?
Who won it?
Who was even in it?
Who was in it? Just tell me who was in it.
Ooh, I don't know.
Why do you think it is?
Who won the Civil War?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Hey, I'm drawing a blank. It's one of those things. I feel like I'm on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
America? I don't know.
That's the Confederates, right? I have no clue.
The Union. The North.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So who is our vice president?
Don't know.
I have no idea.
Right now? I don't know.
What's his name? Oh my gosh. I have his name in my, face in my head.
Who is the vice president? Is that like a trick question?
Nope.
Okay. I don't know. I have no idea.
Don't know.
Joe Biden.
Yes.
I don't know.
You're not the only one. A lot of people don't know.
I still feel so.
Okay, who did we gain our independence from?
These are horrible.
I have no idea. Do you know what year we happened to?
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you.
So like 1677 or something like that.
And what show is Snooki on?
Jersey Shore.
What show is Snooki on?
The Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
And then who is Brad Pitt married to?
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
And who was he married to before that?
I think it was Jennifer Aniston.
Awesome. Thank you.
So I just realized once I started playing that, I realized I played this last week. But I couldn't stop it. I had to play it again. I remembered playing it now. But anyway. And it is Punkin' Cat. It is, I like to say it's funny, but it's really not. It is sickening. It is unbelievable to me. I've told you all this story before, but I'm going to tell you just real quick here. I'm going to condense it a little bit. And I was working in New Mexico one time, running a loader on a highway job out there. And we stopped for lunch, and there was a really, really, really pretty little operator that was running a loader over there, too. And we stopped for lunch, and we got talking politics. I should have never done that. And we were talking about the Bushes there, and it was when George Bush was running his first term. And I said, I don't remember what the topic was, but I said, yeah, I'd done something just like his daddy. And she said, oh, was his daddy a president too? All right, sweetheart. Well, I'm just going to ease on back up here on my tractor and go to work, pretend like I didn't even talk to you today. It's unbelievable. But there are so many people out there that think just like they are, don't think like these people. They have no earthly idea what is what's going on around them here. All right, let's see. I've got alright, let me see here. I've just got another little news item here. Alright, let's look at another one here. I'm going to get into a little bit of gun-related stuff here. So, you know what? No, I'm not yet. I'm not. I've got a couple things here I've saved for a long time. I was going to give them to Amy, and I keep forgetting to give them to her. And since tonight is such a wreck, anyway, I think we're going to get into a couple of deals here that have to do with preparedness and survival and whatnot. And when we get done with that, we'll have time, I'm sure, because we have 2 hours to muddle through here. So we're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back, and we'll get on with this.
There's a full moon over Tulsa. I hope that it's shining on you. The nights are getting cold in Cherokee County. There's a blue northern passing through. I remember green eyes and a rancher's daughter, but remember is all that I do. Losing you left a pretty good cowboy with nothing to hold on to. Sundown came and I drove to town and drank a drink or two.
Peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Inevitable.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Is it common sense to allow your activist judges to ignore your history, your culture, your Declaration of Independence, and every other founding document to remove God from public life? And endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, their creator, not the ACLU, not the will of the atheist, or the anti-Americans that sit on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Separation of church and state, yes. Separation of God from public life, never intended by your founding fathers. Is it common sense that the very political party who claims to be the party of the people and shouts, "We will bring change," consistently stops all common sense legislation to secure your borders, establish workplace verification, and stop taxpayer money for illegals? They call themselves progressive, global thinkers. We had another word for them in 1776. We called them traitors. This happened all once before. 232 years ago, it led to revolution and thousands of dead in the streets. It will happen again unless you take back America now.
I hope we have once again reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
From my cold, dead hands.
Only an aroused citizenry will turn this uncommon sense around. And he or she who does nothing now is helping them to destroy America. My name is Thomas Paine, and I approve of this message. I only hope to God you will too.
Colonized America, we will stand for tyranny. Oh, he. And it's too late to apologize. It's too late. I said it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. I'm going to keep looking for something here that I worked on feverishly over the weekend. I think you'll like it. I'm not quite done with it. You'll hear it again. I won't bombard you with it. You'll hear it once maybe once a month or something like that. But I thought I'd play you the beginning of it, the initial deal. There it is, right there. I found it. So let's see here if I can do anything with it now that I found it. All right, stand by. I'm not going to play it till the next break. I'm just trying to get it queued up here. We're actually going to talk about a couple of preparedness items that I've dug up here. And I've been, you know, there was, people are, money aside, that's the hard thing, is people are having a hard time finding the money to do the things that they want to do as far as training and whatnot. It's not that everybody, of course, there's always that bunch that believes that they know everything there is to know already, and they're not willing to go out and spend a dime on trying to, on the off chance that they might accidentally learn something. But then there's others. A lady called me today. She was in her classes we did in Tucson last weekend, and she asked about some tactical type handgun training. She didn't know exactly what term to use. But she said, I watched, I listened to the things you said and watched some of the things you did there. And she says, all of a sudden, I'm not very comfortable with my skill level. You know, and is there something in your, going on up there that we can join, that we can do and get, better off here? And so as it turned out, we managed to work out something that we can get some people together and get some classes going in her area. So, but the big deal of it here was the fact that some people are even though they can't afford it, are coming up and saying, we've got to do something different here. And it's not only shooting, it's every facet of preparedness and survival that there is. Everything from the food that you make, food canning, dehydrating food, building fires, everything, every single thing. People are starting to realize that there are so many things to this here, that they feel like they need to brush up on it a little bit. So, all right, I found that deal, and hopefully if all goes well, it's about 13 minutes long. We're not going to play it right now. There's going to be an extra long break here at the top of the hour, and we'll play that for you. So I got to looking at some of this stuff. Like I said, I was going to let Amy do this, but I think we're going to go ahead and mess with it. There's two or three things that I want to share with you. And, you know, some of you already know this. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be a bit surprised what Mother Earth hadn't already covered this. But if there's one person, one of you that don't know, then that's who I'm talking to right now. This is a type of bread. It's an emergency bread made with very, very simple, very minimal amount of ingredients here. And they, you know, if you look in the Bible, you know, look at lots of your old journals and stories and books and newspaper articles and even TV shows, even though a lot of them are fiction, but they still got the idea from them somewhere. And bread is a big deal. Bread is the staple of life, so to speak. So there's a bread here that is an emergency bread. This guy uses a candle. Now, the candle that he's using looks very much like the ones that we had made from the beeswax place there with three wicks in it. And those were great for fairly low temperature cooking. But he tells you here even how to make the candle and how to make a tin can stove and all kinds of stuff there. But, you know, he says normally bread needs an oven, usually, you know, electric, gas, wood, something like that. But in an emergency, you may not have a working oven, and that's a fact. Now, for those of us that have cooked out in the woods and stuff a lot, we've got Dutch ovens. You don't necessarily have to have an oven. You can have a cast iron pot with a lid on it, and you make a big bed of coals and put your peach cobbler in there and cover it up with coals and cook it, and it works just fine. And that is very much an oven that you can carry with you. But that's not what he's talking about. He said if that's the case and you don't have an oven and you want bread that's quick to make, has few ingredients, and can be cooked over any heat source. Let me move that out of the way there. This and of course they call it flatbread. It's an unleavened bread, and that's mentioned many, many times in the Bible. And it's it's like the flatbread you get at Subway, you know, kind of like a supercharged tortilla kind of. So it says this, and this can be cooked anywhere that you have any type of a heat source, a flat surface, a frying pan of some degree. And, of course, the necessary ingredients. So, for making it in a more civilized environment, he has a 4-cup glass dish, Pyrex dish, a rather non-flexible spoon for mixing. And of course, that can be done with anything. You know, me and my dad one time got lost out in the Carson National Forest. And I may have told you this, but we looked and looked and looked, and we couldn't find the box that Mama put the silverware and stuff in. And here we were. Now, we were way out in the woods. We was wanting to go hunting. We had no intention of turning around and driving all the way back to Bloomfield or somewhere and buying a box of plastic spoons. So what'd we do? We found a cedar tree, and we made a knife, a fork, and a spoon, and I still have mine somewhere. If I think about it a little bit, I think I could come up with them, but I kept them for years. I'm pretty sure I still have them. So you can do this with utensils that you make, obviously. You need a flat surface, countertop or a cutting board or something like that. Out in the woods, you could probably use, you may have a you could use a flat rock. You could use, your camp table, with a little bit of ingenuity, you might be able to use the toolbox on your truck or something like that. You need a rolling pin. This could be, in the absence of a rolling pin, it could be a vinegar bottle or some kind of a round bottle with no edges on it or anything. A wine bottle would work good if you do that kind of thing. And to roll this stuff out, and a frying pan, something with a good heavy bottom on it to distribute the heat evenly. So he says, for emergency practice, use a tin can stove and a candle on a non-flammable surface. If this is your first time making this kind of bread, I would recommend trying it on a regular stove so you can learn how the bread will behave and what to expect. That's called training, called practice. Yeah, that's a good thing. It says, optional here, you can use a plate covered with a spare tea towel to transfer your cooked bread to. Cover the fresh bread with a towel to keep it warm and soft. Ingredients, very simple. If this recipe, the way they're doing this, will make 5-6 inch little flatbreads, little tortillas. If you need more, just add more flour and water, and an additional quarter teaspoon of salt for every cup of flour used. Each additional cup of flour will make 4 to 5 more, whatever you call these things, little bread things, tortillas. So you need 2 cups of flour. In this deal, he uses fresh ground whole wheat flour for this batch that he's making for us here right now. You can use a mixture of wheat and whole wheat, white and whole wheat, just plain white or just plain whole wheat. Just don't use a self-rising flour, as no leavening agent is required. 1/2 teaspoon of salt. I prefer to use a moderately fine ground sea salt, but any table salt will work just fine. 1/4 to 1/2 cup of water. Says he used just over 1/4 cup as his wheat was fresh ground. If you're using pre-ground or stored flour, you might want to use a little bit more water. If you dump the water in its entirety, you may need to add extra flour. So he likes to put the water in just a little bit at a time until it gets the right consistency, so he don't wind up with too much. So that is flour, salt, and water. You know, and what this is basically what he's making here is about the same as hardtack. It probably could be considered hardtack. You need 40 minutes, 10 minutes of prep time, 15 minutes rest, and I think he's resting the mixture, not himself, and 15 minutes for cooking. Dump most of your flour into the mixing bowl. Keep a small amount aside to use when you roll out the dough or grab extra flour when you get to that point. Add a small amount of water and stir. Then add a little bit more and stir some more. Keep going until your flour takes on a crumbly appearance and starts to clump together. This was reached with 1/4 cup of water in this particular stuff with the flour that he was using. So use your hands and knead the dough against the bottom of the bowl until it feels smooth. 3 to 4 minutes. At this point, all the flour should be absorbed into the dough and there should be no residual stickiness. If the dough feels sticky, add a bit more flour and continue kneading. Cover your ball of dough and let it rest for 15 to 30 minutes. This lets the gluten relax, which will make the rolling of the dough easier and enable you to roll the dough quite thin. Start heating your cooking pan. Divide your dough into walnut-sized clumps or a little smaller. With 2 cups of flour, you'll get 8 to 10 dough pieces out of this. That's pretty cheap bread right there. 2 cups of flour, you get 8 to 10 of these things. Spread flour on your rolling surface and press the first lump in dough into a flat circle. Use your rolling pin, roll the dough until you make it as thin as you can make it. This is usually reached when the dough springs back when you try to make it thinner. The thinner it is, the quicker it'll cook. Check the temperature of your frying pan. You should be hot enough to make a drop of water dance when you drop on it. It's exactly what we do for pancakes. It's what I taught my kids to do when you're ready for pancakes. Put a little water on there. If it bounces around, it's just right. When your pan gets up to that temperature, flip your first piece of bread onto it and start rolling the second one. So while for the first one, you may want to just focus on cooking so you can get it done right without multitasking here. After putting this on the frying pan, keep a close eye on it. When the edges start to curl up or appear dry, then flip it. When the second side starts to bubble, flip it again. At this point, bubbles start forming on the bread, and the bread will roil. When it slows, flip it, and more bubbles should appear. With the correct heat, the bubbles can all join into one massive pita pocket bubble. The more bubbles, the lighter the bread will be. When the cooking slows its bubble growth, hopefully has a bit of nice browning on each side, flip it onto your tea towel covered plate and cover, then roll and cook the rest of the batch. It says it's best eaten fresh and are the most flexible of the same day they're cooked. Hardtack is very much like this, but you don't make it quite as thin, and you bake it until it's actually fairly solid. Said for fun, in a more nutritious version, you can add freshly ground flax seed, 1/4 cup or 2 cups of flour. When adding flax or another seed, be aware that the seeds will break up the gluten network so that it doesn't catch the air in the same way. When adding flax, you won't get full pocket bubbles. Use different wheat flours, blends, or combination for more variety. This emergency bread is easy to make, effective, and contains very few ingredients. You can make as much as you need for a single day or for a few days. A small batch size prevents waste, means that you can enjoy the bread while it's fresh. Working with two people will speed up the process. This recipe is very hard to get wrong, but super easy to get right. If you've never made your own bread, start with this recipe. If you feel like you want to make bread in an emergency, the best time to learn how is now. Makes perfect sense. I think that's a good idea. And I'm going to start doing some of these things. I think it's kilogram, you're right. You can very much make flour out of acorns. Sure can. The C7, yeah. You know, it feels funny talking about this kind of stuff because it's not something I normally do. But it's something that has, I've told you that I kind of try to follow that still small voice once in a while when something tells me, maybe you should learn how to do this kind of stuff. Spend a little time getting other people involved in that. So, I've pulled this up here and I've thought about it time and again, and I'm just going to do it. I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. That just sounds like something I need to do. Yeah, Doc, that's right. There was actually quite a number of manufacturers that didn't have serial numbers on prior to 1968. Some did and some didn't. The ones that did were strictly for the company's benefit, for inventory purposes. But lots of them didn't have them at all. I have a it's a Mossberg. I've got it's not a shotgun. It's a .22. It was a Montgomery Ward .22. And if you look it up in the, I looked it up a long time ago, and it actually was a Mossberg. It cost $19, brand new. Still got it. Still shoots like a dream. And it has no, serial number on it. Yeah, and it was a store brand. It says it's a Montgomery Ward. Mossberg made lots and lots of Montgomery Ward guns, different styles there, shotguns, and I think they even made some little lever action 30-30s and stuff. Let's see here. Let me cruise on. You guys have been smoking here on the kilogram. You could actually absolutely make that on a solar oven. You betcha. Easy to do. We've got two of them. Actually, we have three now because I bought one at a yard sale last fall, and it's in good shape. It didn't tell it's been used. It's been beat up a little bit, but it's all the reflectors are all in perfect shape and everything. There's no reason in the world it wouldn't do as good as any of the rest of them. Let's see. And we've tried that. You can do the cardboard box and the tin foil thing. We've done that. It'll work in a pinch when you don't have anything else. But I tell you, it is very, very important that you try desperately to get as many wrinkles out of that tin foil as you can. The more the flatter and more reflection you get off of it, the better it works. But sun ovens are the way to go if you can swing one. They're about sometimes you can find them on Amazon. I think they're probably pick one up for $225 or so, $250 maybe. But they're worth it if you camp much or if you're getting ready for poop hit the fan, then certainly you ought to try to swing a sun oven when you can. Doc, when the FFL logs in a non-serial numbered gun, you just put NA, you just put non-available. You describe the gun as best you can, where the firing or the serial number goes in the book, you just put non-available. And that's simple as that. And that was the main thing in 1968 of getting everybody to put their serial numbers on these guns, because there is no possible way to keep track of them. One Mossberg, Montgomery Ward 22 out there made during that time looks just exactly like mine. There's probably 80,000 of them up there out in there that look just exactly like mine right now. And the only difference in mine is I scrawled my name in mine with a little electric inscriber type thing years and years and years ago. And that's my serial number. And I could, if I checked a gun in like that as an FFL, I would probably, if there was a name or some type of a descriptive mark or something on it, I would put that in that serial number box. And just for grins and giggles there. All right. Well, I don't know what y'all think about this this whole bread situation and everything, but we're going to get into another deal of food, of storing food without refrigeration and stuff here. Actually, how to store meat for years without any refrigeration, of course. There's a number of ways to do that. So we're going to get back to that in a minute. You guys need to hear this. Or at least I think you need to hear it. I may be wrong, but I think you'll find it interesting. It's 12 minutes long, 12 minutes in a little bit. And I think it'll bring back some memories for some of you guys. So I'll be back in a little bit. Come on. And we're waiting. So why is it that we're waiting so long here? I pulled this out of Google Drive and it worked on my phone. Of course, it's not on my phone anymore because of my factory reset. So let's try something else. Let's see if we can see what else we can do here. How about let's try Alright, welcome to the Shooting Bench. This is Nostalgia Central here. We've got a few clips for you from various places that the show has been put on. We haven't nearly got all of them by any remote stretch. But we've got quite a few, and I just wanted to throw this in here. This first one, we missed about the first 30 minutes of the show. This was the very first show, certainly the first Shooting Bench, to be done after the collapse of the Watchmen. This was the first show done on Just Measures Radio Network on the 6th of June in 2011, and this was done from a little town in Nevada called Eureka. And we're just going to listen to little clips from a few of these and move on from there. Let's listen in here. You know what, T-Dog? We may try to get Miss Amy in here. She has migrated in here to this diner and is bonding with these folks here. Nice people here. This in Eureka, Nevada, when you drive up there, it says the friendliest little town on the loneliest road in America. And there, that's why we had to stop here and do it, because the next stop is Ely, Nevada, and it's, I don't know, it's 100, 120 miles, and there's nothing but barbed wire fence between here and there and a few road signs, a couple of antelope maybe. Once again, this is the Shooting Bench. I don't know how this is about the ninth time I've said this. This is the Shooting Bench. I am Cope Reynolds, and this is coming to you live and in Technicolor from Moab, Utah. One of the most incredible views in the world. The land, terrain features and stuff around here are unlike anything anybody else has to offer. We love coming through here. I've been here like a million times, but I never get tired of it. It's astounding. So that's where we're at now. This is the 7th of June. Okay, welcome. It is Tuesday, the 2nd of August, the day before Hump Day, the day before Jason and I will go forth into deep into enemy territory, into the belly of the beast, to educate folks in the fine art of pistol craft. We're headed to Ohio tomorrow at 0:30 in the morning, and we should be to Just Measures Coin Shop sometime late tomorrow evening. All right. Where in the world is Cope and Jason? Hello, it is Thursday, the 4th of August already, and we are in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Jason and I, we've made a long trip, 26 hours of driving. Welcome to another edition of the Shooting Bench. We drove 26, or we drove 18 hours yesterday and stopped where in the heck did we stop? I was tired last night. Little Rock, Arkansas. And this morning got up and come on in to Mount Vernon, Indiana. Anyway, here we are. Jeez, what a trip. Where in the world are Cope and Jason right now? Well, we are in, well, the locals call it Belle Fountain. It's spelled Bellefontaine, so I don't know what it is. It's you can look it on the map and call it whatever you want to. But this has been an experience. I told you that Oklahoma's roads suck pretty bad, and Arkansas just sucks, period. And we've got here at Ohio. I've never been a real big fan of Ohio, but I was kind of grateful to get here this time. I found that Ohio is more better than some of the other ones we've been through. This is my third tour to Ohio. Yeah, Jason says we're in BF Ohio, if you can figure that out. And we got here, and our host, gracious, got a nice place to shoot out there. We got here a little late because we stayed with Bobby a little long last night, but we're going to make that up to him tomorrow. And it's been a lot of fun. By the way, for those of you that didn't know this already, it is Friday, the 5th of August already. Welcome to another edition of the Shooting Bench. We are coming to you, Jason and I, live and in Technicolor from, well, I was going to say beautiful downtown St. Louis, but yeah, it is. It is beautiful because we just come out of Illinois. So and that's why we're late, because we didn't want to stop and do it behind enemy lines. I was afraid that, I didn't know if Jay, we've only got two AKs with us and a limited amount of ammunition, and I'm not sure that Jason would have been able to hold them off. And, I may have had to play a long commercial break so I could get out there and help him stand them off here. So we made a dash to get inside America here. And we just did it. We're stopped at a gas station in the sunshine in the middle of nowhere, but we are in St. Louis. So if you hear the traffic going by and everything, we're stopped at a, what is that, Jason? Diarrhea Queen or Sonic or some little ice cream place here. And tuning in on us here, it is Tuesday, the 9th of August, And we're coming to you live and in Technicolor from beautiful downtown Shamrock, Texas. We are at Big Vern's Steakhouse in Shamrock. The folks at Big Vern's Steakhouse have been kind enough to let us borrow their air conditioner and their television, their Diet Cokes here for a little bit, and to bring you the shooting bench. And next weekend is Pioneer Days in Luna. If you guys can possibly swing the time and money to swing by here and check this out, you will be absolutely flabbergasted. This is a little town. It's not even a town. It just barely classifies as a community. There's 158 people in an unincorporated area. We have Southwest Shooting Authority and one little tiny bitty store, two gas pumps, and a post office. That's it. And 158 people. And that's all there is. But when it comes Pioneer Days, they have, you know, the average rodeo, professional rodeo, stuff you see on TV, sometimes has 20 and 30 teams, team roping and stuff like that, bulldog and whatever. There are over 50 teams come to this rodeo. I don't have any idea what is so appealing about this little rodeo in this town. Okay, here we are. We are welcome to a special edition of the Shooting Bench on Just Measures Radio. We are coming to you live and in Technicolor, but not really. It's a little bit of green, a whole lot of brown, and some blue skies here. And we are live in Quartzsite, Arizona right now. And this is going to be an exciting weekend. There's no question about it. There's a lot of guns here. There's a lot of people rolling in. My old friend Bob Wright's in here. And I would suspect that Bob Mitzel is probably with him. I don't know how many of his group that he brought. I'll be seeing him right after the show. A lot of things going on. And it appears that from what I understand, the law enforcement here is a little bit on edge, which I can believe that. If you listened to the show yesterday, you heard and found out that it doesn't seem that they're going to receive any help from any of the surrounding communities. And the sheriff here, his old-time buddy, will probably be about the only help that he gets. And I don't say that meaning that he's going to need help. It's just that I know that he wanted help. And we'll see how all this turns out. But there's folks steadily pulling in. We're broadcasting to you right now live from Vito's RV Park right outside of Quartzsite, Arizona. This is the happening place. This is where it's at. I met Vito himself a while ago. And thanks, guys. I appreciate you. I was worried about the sound. I have a great big fan blowing by me. We're sitting outside right now. And we've got a canopy over us, but it's 113 degrees. And sun shining bright, and it's just a beautiful day for a rebellion. Some other things that happened here. Number one, remember 2 or 3 weeks ago we told you that Jason and I and Amy had stopped in Socorro to get fuel, and we found an old ratty flag flying across the street. And of course, Amy talked me out of just taking it, so I went and put a note on the door. Well, we went back not once, but twice this weekend, and found that they have removed that flag. Of course, they haven't put up a new one yet, but I don't care about that. I just care about them taking that old ratty one down. Happened over the weekend at our latest crusade, where we went down to the emergency tree cutting plan that they're implementing down in Otero County. Learned a lot down there. We found out that we are not alone in our quest for freedom and liberty and all things right and normal. All gun related, of course, that may vary just a little bit tonight. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. But anyway, the Shooting Bench, it is the 11th of December, and Jason and I are tucked away, hiding in a little cubbyhole in Caldwell, Idaho, trying to sneak through here without making too much to do here. I didn't tell you what they told me down at Walgreens a while ago, did I? Well, I went into Walgreens to get some stuff, and there's two gals back there, and of course I was wearing my gun, as I always do. And she said, well, how do you like it here? And I said, oh, it's fine, but I don't live here. We're just traveling through. She said, where are you from? And I told her, and she said, well, I figured it was someplace like that. You carrying a gun. So that's pretty much what everybody does around here. And I said, yeah, we thought we'd go ahead and cut our trip a little short tonight and stay here instead of going on into Oregon. We had a little extra time. We could have made it on into Oregon. And she said, oh, yeah, we treat carriers a whole lot better here than they do over there. I'm glad you stopped. Well, you guys are not going to believe this. I'm going to have to put a playlist on here for a couple of minutes. I just heard the dogs barking, and I went outside, and there's a bear in the goat pen, if you can believe that. The bear is dead now. And I'm going to have to probably call the game department here. But he is inside the goat pen, and a .22 Magnum fixed him right up. So I'm not going to interrupt the show other than I am going to have to play a playlist here for a few minutes, and I'll be back in here in just a little bit. So... Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Hello, Molly. Glad you can make it in there with us tonight. What do you want pictures of? I'm not sure what you're looking for there. But anyway... All right, we've for Molly's benefit here. oh, the bear! Yeah, I might be able to get you some at the next break. I think I can. You missed the first part of the show. I told you I had to do a factory reset on my phone, and that's where a lot of my pictures and stuff were. But I think I've got a lot of them backed up on Google or something there. So I'll go see if I can find those for you here in a little bit. See if I can get some on there. That was an interesting night. It really was. That was a lot of fun. But anyway. And Kilogram, yeah, you was one of them that was on The Watchmen with us all those many, many shows ago. And I was looking for some of those. I did a little bit of traveling with The Watchmen. I wanted to find the... Well, actually, I didn't do a show when I first got hooked up with The Watchmen. That was at the Right to Carry rally in, where was that? It was right north of Ruidoso, New Mexico. Capitan, I think it was, that we had that. And that's where I got hooked up with The Watchmen. And there's a great rally. There was not nearly as many people, I think, as everybody expected there would be, but there was quite a few out there. And it was fun. And I didn't do... yeah, I did. If I could find all of my archives from The Watchmen, I made some trips. Matter of fact, the last trip that we made would have been in May. And the only thing I can find at the end of May was Doc going on a blind rant about everybody stealing his network or whatever. So the trip we made up there, we made, I think, three shows. I can think of several motels that me and Amy were in where we did shows. There should be... There's at least one, there's a couple of shows from the Mirage Hotel in Las Vegas. There's one from a little town in, or a little motel in Ely, Nevada. There is at least one from Vancouver, Washington. There is a couple from Yakima, Washington. We have probably three or four from Lincoln, California. We have at least two from my sister's house in Las Vegas. Where else? Can't think of where else we might have some. Anyway, there's still quite a few missing. I'm going to try to put those together and add to this at some point. But anyway, I thought it was kind of cool, so I couldn't wait to play it for you guys. Okay, Molly, we've really gone off the deep end here. We're going kind of a different direction than we have ever gone before on the shooting bench. We're talking about some of the different ways to make some survival foods. We just talked about hardtack and unleavened bread and stuff, which is basically the same thing. So now we're going to look at how to preserve meat a little bit without refrigeration. And there's several different ways to do that. And one of the most common, of course, is dehydrating, making jerky out of it. That's a good chemical-free way to preserve meat. And you just dehydrate it until it's too dry for bacteria, for microbial activity. You know? So compared to traditional sun-drying, using an electric dehydrator, certainly it's faster. I'm not convinced that it's any safer. It may be when you look at flies and other contaminants, while it's drying, but I can't really see that it's any safer. You add a little smoke to that and there's no way that the electric dehydrator is any safer than, doing out in the open air. But, whether you like it chewy or, crumbly or whatever, a lot of that depends on how thin you slice it and how you're drying it and stuff. So one thing about drying meat is you want to make absolutely certain that there's not any fat left in it. You have to take a little extra time, and it's best to get nice thin slices off of off of a hind quarter, out of the back straps, or somewhere. Depending on the animal, there's some in the front shoulders and stuff. Some of your leaner animals, of course, your wild animals, deer, elk, rabbits, stuff like that, works way better, I think, than, I won't say it works better, but it's easier than beef. There's so much fat even in the meat of beef that you have to be kind of careful with it. So make sure your temperature gets to around 165 degrees when you're drying this out, and that's the same as heating up water. When we talked about as long as it gets to 165 degrees and stays that way for a little bit, it's going to kill everything that's in it. So you don't want to get too much over 165 degrees, or you wind up cooking it. But at 165 degrees, you kill things like E. coli and salmonella and all that. And again, if you can add a little smoke to it, it's all the better. But if you can heat the meat up to, at the most you want to go with it, you can squeeze it up to 250 for just a little while, 10, 15 minutes, before you put it into the dehydrator, just to make sure that everything's killed in it. But you don't want to keep it there for very long. You're not trying to cook it. You're trying to just make it safe. So running the dehydrator continuously at its maximum temperature for 16, 20 hours, 15, 20 hours, will make it sufficiently dry to make it where you honestly call it jerky there. And then you can store that. You want to store it in an airtight container so that it doesn't get, take the humidity and the moisture out of the air. Of course, if you live in Quartzsite, or Death Valley or Barstow, you don't have to worry about that too awful much. But I tell you, we've seen some amazing things down in Barstow when I was stationed down there. But you can extend the life even more, though, by putting that jerky in a freezer or vacuum packing it. You can also cure meat with salt. Salt is a dehydrator. You guys have probably heard the term salt pork and other salt-related meat terms there. But just plain old salt is a dehydrating agent that helps preserve meat. The meat is meat cured in salt is safe because the salt itself, or other than heat, the salt now is an antimicrobial. So there's basically two ways to salt cure meat. One of them is to rub salt on the meat and let the juices drain off, and that'll result in some getting dry, after a period of time. It's as easy as just mixing the salt with the meat, but you can also, with that salt, mix some spices and stuff with it. The salt will do its job. The herbs and spices that you put with it will do their job without affecting the effectiveness of the salt. And you can also put it in a salt solution, a brine. It's actually called brining. And you can add brown sugar, honey, or something like that, or whatever herbs or spices you want to put in there without affecting that also. And then there's another way called biltong, which gets into marinating with vinegar and prior to the salt and dry. It gets a little complicated, more than some people want to mess with. But I think the brining is probably a great way to do that one. There's a lot of commercially available salt cured meat products out there, and some of those involve additives. You may or may not want to consume these additives. Some people are worried about it and some aren't. Frankly, I'm not much. You can cut down on the chemical load by curing the meat with kosher salt. Now, this kosher salt is something that Amy and I use from time to time. We do a lot of the real salt stuff that comes out of Nevada, and they have large containers of kosher salt to use for things like this. And all of the real salt, everything that they make, is completely free of any types of additives or contaminants or anything, or chemicals or any of that kind of stuff. Real salt is a little more expensive than table salt or regular salt that you buy at the store, but it's worth the extra money for sure. You can make a curing salt thing by putting a 6% sodium nitrite. This is known to, offers a little bit of protection against botulism. I don't know how effective it is, but you can't use too much of that. USDA recommends only an ounce per quart of water of this curing salt. So if you're worried about botulism, I would say, and I'm offering this as a information for informational purposes only, you do with it whatever you want, but I would say that if you're making a solution of some kind like that, I would say put colloidal silver in there with it, and that should take care of anything you have a problem with. Canning, of course, that's probably the safest of all. The only problem with canning is you have all these cotton picking jars you got to keep up with. But every once in a while, we've got a good bit of canned meat that we've had for quite a while, and it makes great stews. We'll just drag out something else that Amy does once in a while. She just takes and boils a bunch of potatoes, puts a little salt and stuff in there with them, and we put them in Ziploc bag, freezer bags, and freeze them. And it's so handy to get a pack. As a matter of fact, I made the other night. Amy was going off to, she was kind of in a bad mood, and she was going off to work, and you know, as I told you, she's had this job that's kept her away from her show for all this time. And by the way, she should be back in all of her glory no later than next Monday. Actually, next Monday, which should be her first day back, and be that job has run its course now, so she'll be back now. She's back about 3 weeks earlier than we'd expected. So, at any rate, I was desperate. I'm not a cook by any remote stretch of the imagination, but every once in a while I get lucky and throw some stuff together that turns out to be somewhat edible. And one of the things that I did here is I run out in the freezer and got one of those rabbits that kilogram, go away. We don't want to hear about Smurfs. We all know better than that. And I think you know better than that, too. I think you're just putting that on there, being facetious. I went out in the freezer and grabbed a rabbit, and I knew she was going to be gone probably. How long? When did I start this? I think I probably had about 2 hours maybe to put this together. So I grabbed a package of those frozen potatoes and I think it was canned rabbit, and some cans of cans of green beans and canned, everything canned, just all kinds of stuff, and just threw it all together. And cooked the rabbit first, and put all that stuff in there, and browned some onions and put in there with it. And I tell you what, it turned out damn fine. I mean, it was most assuredly a something to write home about. And she was happy, and I was happy, and everybody was happy, so it worked out pretty good. And we do that from time to time, usually me more than her. She really likes to you know, get to the menu and do all this stuff. She's such a good cook. But she gets into it a little more than I do. I make things very simple, very quick, very cheap, basically something to fill a hollow spot, you know. And she likes to get a little more fancy than I do. Yeah, I think most everybody on the shooting bench, we've educated over the years a lot of people on colloidal silver, and we've got I don't think there's anybody left that listens to the shooting bench that's not that either doesn't or hasn't regularly used colloidal silver for a period of time. No, Molly, it really doesn't make a difference what time of year to get the rabbit. That's an old wives' tale. The only difference is that there'll be, during the warmer months, you'll find that there's more fleas on them, but you can find flea. I have thrown rabbits down in the snow and watched the snow just almost turn black from hundreds of fleas jumping off the rabbits. So there's fleas on rabbits any time of year. You can look at the livers, and even if the liver looks like it's been, looks like it's unhealthy, it doesn't affect the meat if the meat is cooked all the way through. You know, our ancestors, I'll guarantee you, did not wait until wintertime to kill a cottontail. They ate them year-round, as we do. I won't eat them during when they're breeding. I won't eat them when I know that they have young little ones out there, unless I'm hungry, unless I'm starving. But we also raise rabbits, and the rabbit that we ate there was a domestic rabbit. We've got several of them in the freezer, but As far as what time of year, the only difference would be is that the fleas are more active in the warmer months. And other than that, it doesn't affect the meat one iota if it's cooked properly. Guarantee you. Let's see here. The detinker's using some colloidal silver there for a wolf spider bite. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever used. Well, I don't think I've ever used it on a. I've used it on animal bites, not insect bites, but I have used it on, you know, dog bites and stuff like that. You know, for those of you that yes, Molly, I have tried jackrabbit. Jackrabbit, if you get it in its first year, it's excellent. It's as good as anything else. If you wait, you know, and they're older and tougher, don't despair. Just make a stew out of it. It's not hard to do. It's not. It tastes good. Fried, it's no good. It tastes okay, but it's a little chewy. Pretty tough, the older jackrabbits. But just dice it up and make a stew out of it, man. It's it works fine, and it's as tasty as any of the rest of it. I've eaten jackrabbit. Matter of fact, when me and my ex lived in Barstow, California, when I was in the service out there, we got to a point where my army pay wasn't quite cutting it, so we had to decide if we wanted to party or if we wanted to eat. And I said, well, we can party and eat jackrabbit. That'll work. And we ate jackrabbits fairly regular while I was stationed out there in Fort Irwin. That's right, Kilogram. That's pretty much it. If it walks, crawls, swims, or flies, yeah, you can eat it. And I've tried a lot of stuff like that just sheerly for the novelty. I've just tried to see what it tastes like. I've eaten, you know, woodpecker and sparrowhawk and possum and porcupine and raccoon and lots of rattlesnake. I've eaten dozens of rattlesnakes. What else kind of odd stuff that I've killed? Of course, I've eaten, you know, octopus and squid and stuff like that. That's stuff that you buy, though. I'm talking about stuff that I've killed and fixed myself. Eating quite a few insects, you know, grasshoppers and ants and stuff like that. And stir fried, you take your ants and put them in a jar or something, leave them overnight so that they poop. And boil them just briefly and get some of that formic acid out of them and stir fry them up with some rice, and they're quite tasty. Grasshoppers, same way. Break the back legs off of them, leave them overnight in a container of some kind where they can't eat, and they're great stir fried, or fry them up without the rice. They're fine. Okay, where were we at here? We were just about to get into canning, I believe. And if you want something for the longest period of time, you know, meat, canned meat does not have a shelf life. You get your Spam, your potted meat, your corned beef, stuff like that. It lasts virtually, kept at some reasonable temperature, pretty much forever. And matter of fact, Spam used to have on their website, now I don't know if it's still there, I haven't looked for a long time, but it, up till about, I got in an argument with a guy on a forum that I was on back in 2005, and argued about having no shelf life, and I went and got the link for the thing off of Spam's website, and sure enough, it was pretty much lasts forever. The let's see here, you know, there's it happens about every 7 years. C7 rabbits are thick this year, and you know, it was 2006. Maybe 2007, where Jason and I, we used to go out to my cousin's ranch out in Lindrith, and good grief, we killed hundreds and hundreds of rabbits out there. I mean, just you know, till we run out of ammo. because there was just so many of them out there. And they were just, you know, they were literally affecting the forage for the cows out there. So we'd go out and bust rabbits till we couldn't stand it, till we run out of ammo. And I did that in Nevada one time too. And then you'll find, they may dwindle for 1 year and then they'll be gone. You'll see, two or three rabbits here and there every once in a while. You kick one out. But right now, man, I don't know how they are up there where you're at, but right now, they are thick here. Matter of fact, this winter, when all these babies grow up that I'm seeing around here, a lot of these, are just a couple of months, 3 months old right now. I plan on putting a whole bunch of those in the freezer. And if any of you haven't seen, I've got a video on YouTube of how to clean a cottontail. And I know that everybody knows how to clean a rabbit, but not everybody does it just exactly like this. So you might want to go on my YouTube channel. It's called Skin a Rabbit. And if I can find it here for you real quick, I'll throw that out there, throw the link out there for you, and you can check it out during the next break here. There it is right there, by golly. I'm getting good at this. And it's only, it's less than 4 minutes long, so you'll have plenty of time during the break if you want to check it out and see how we do rabbits here. And Doc is absolutely right. You'll starve to death on rabbit. Rabbit offers a lot of protein, but you cannot live on rabbit alone. Man cannot live on rabbit alone. You'll need to get a little bit of extra stuff, a little bit of carbohydrates, some vegetables or something in there to put with it. If you're going to can rabbit, there's several things that you can put in there with it if you want. But anyway, all right, I'll put this link in there for you. Whoops, that one don't look like it's going to work. Let's see. All right, that one looks good. All right, there's something for your viewing enjoyment there for a few minutes. And we'll take off here and be back here. Let's see, how about we do this? Too bad Eddie Crump isn't with us tonight, because he would say, I like it.
Thank you. with your daddy all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
By the hand, take me by the hand. Pretty mama, come and dance with your daddy all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
Take me by the hand, pretty mama, come and dance with your daddy all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
It is true, that's who they were. Well, when Khrushchev came over, remember he pounded his shoe, he met with a guy who was the Secretary of Agriculture for the Eisenhower administration. His name was Ezra Taft Benson. And then also talked to him about agriculture in the Soviet Union. This is what Ezra Taft Benson said about that meeting, and listen carefully, especially towards the end. This is what he said about that meeting with Khrushchev and the communists back in the 1960s. Special note, and remember that Ezra Taft Benson's grandchildren are probably about your age now if you're in your 40s or 50s. Listen carefully.
I have personally witnessed the heart-rending results of the loss of freedom. I have talked face-to-face with the godless communist leaders. It may surprise you to learn that I was host to Mr. Khrushchev for a half day when he visited the United States. Not that I'm proud of it. I opposed his coming then, and I still feel it was a mistake to welcome this atheistic murderer as a state visitor. As we talked face to face, he indicated that my grandchildren would live under communism. After assuring him that I expected to do all in my power to assure that his and all other grandchildren will live under freedom, he arrogantly declared in substance, "You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands."
The warning from the 1960s from the Secretary of Agriculture, Ezra Taft Benson, "We'll keep feeding you socialism until you realize you've already got communism."
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. Let's finish this up. A little bit of discussion about squirrels in the chat room there. The only thing I don't like about squirrels is cleaning them. They are so much harder to skin and clean than a rabbit. Rabbits are so simple. I can do rabbits completely and have it ready for the pot in literally a matter of seconds. In about a nice young cottontail, I can have it completely ready to put in the pot in under 60 seconds. And squirrels, not so much. Squirrels remind me of turtles. Turtles are, you know, the top half of them is not too hard to clean, but getting that skin and everything off the bottom and getting the legs skinned off a big turtle, that is a pain. It's worth it. Well, I don't know if it's worth it or not. I like turtle. It's good, but it's they are a pain to clean. If I ever do another one, it's going to be a 300-pound snapping turtle. I'm not going to do another 2 or 3 or 4-pound little turtle. They are a pain in the neck. But squirrels are delicious. You know, I, like I said, Amy likes to get recipes and all this stuff. She makes wonderful meals. Me, I make wonderful meals once in a while, but I just throw stuff together. You know, the thing that I used to make squirrel stew a lot, or squirrel and dumplings, when I was down in Southeast Texas. And, a lot of you probably already know how to do this, but, you know, to make dumplings, the easiest way to do it, go get a can of them biscuits that you smack on the corner of the cabinet and bust open, just take each biscuit and pull it into four pieces and throw it in with the stuff while it's cooking, and you'll have dumplings. And they're good. They're as good as any other dumpling out there, and they're simple and cheap. That's the way to do it. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of squirrel stew. It's excellent. But I'd just rather someone else clean the squirrels. It pisses me off to mess with them like that. All right, let's go. My granddad was, he died, when did he die? He died probably, I had just gotten back from Europe, so probably about... My grandma died while I was in Europe, so he probably died around 88, 90, something like that. And he used to go out and work in these sheep camps out there with the Navajo Indians a lot, out around Shiprock and out in that area. And they said that they eat just all the time. Their biggest thing that they eat while they were in camp was prairie dogs. Now, Molly, if there was a problem with rabbits in the summertime, there would probably be a problem with prairie dogs too. The biggest thing is fleas. You just got to keep the fleas off of it while you skin them and stuff. Prairie dogs are not hard to skin. They're easier than a squirrel is, but the best way to do it, the way I do it, I like to move away from the holes whether it's usually rabbits, you might scare them out of a log or a hole or somewhere, but prairie dogs, I like to move away from the holes and roll my sleeves up. I do the same thing with rabbits. Roll my sleeves up so that I can see the fleas on my arms and they don't get in my clothes and stuff. I've never had a problem with them. I've never had a flea bite that I know of, that I remember of. I just watch my arms real close and get away from the area on the ground where there's a bottom, you know, where... we'll throw a rabbit down in the snow sometimes and let it cool off a little bit. And when it starts cooling, all those fleas will leave it. And we hung some deer up in Wyoming one time, and they were covered with ticks. And I did the same thing. The one and only deer that I ever killed with a bow, same way, covered with ticks. But you hang them up for a little while. Let them cool off. All those ticks will migrate up as the heat rises from the meat. The front shoulders will cool faster than the hindquarters because the meat, because heat rises. So you can let all those ticks migrate up to the very last part up there on the legs, and then you can scrape them all off and not have to pick them off, you know, and then you can leave the skin on there for a while or whatever you want to do. But, so anyway, all right, let's get back to this cannon thing. There's just a little bit left here before we run out of time here. Now, canning, all of these things require that you do it right for the round amount of time and don't cut any corners, because meat not properly preserved can be very, very dangerous. So we want to make sure that we do everything right. So when you're canning this, absolutely for long-term, real long-term, canning certainly is the best. We talked about that a little bit already. So this way it can be stored at room temperature literally for years. Not a year, not a couple of years maybe. We're talking years, lots of years. And there's the more canned meat you have, the better off you are. If you can find anything at all, you know, if you've got plenty of canned meat out there, you know, you can find a little bit of vegetable life of some kind. You know, not vegetable. Anything that would help you to stretch this out a little bit and use that meat for plenty of protein. See if you can find, you know, a few carbohydrates and other things. You know, and I've talked about this before, but if you have a lot of it here in the Southwest, it's everywhere, and that's purslane. Purslane, if I remember correctly, purslane is something like 30-something percent carbohydrates, 90% water, 95% water, and it tastes really good. Purslane is excellent. It has if you've ever eaten watercress, purslane has a very, very light, slightly watercress familiar taste to it. But it's good in salads. It's good by itself. You know, you can dry it and grind it up and make a little spice out of it. And people pull it up and destroy it and get rid of it. Wait, stop. I'll take it. No, I'll take all of it. We'll take and wash it off, and we can't eat right away, we'll dry and turn into something else. But anyway, traditionally, the cans, you know, were sterilized in water bath. They're not considered safe to do that with, especially for meat anymore. But there's two ways to go about it. You can do it hot pack or raw packing. Of course, you need to have jars with lids and sealing rings and all that stuff. You got to have all that ready and have your jars clean and hot and everything, you know, before you start. And pressure canner and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to pretend to tell you all the ever detail of canning meat in here. Lots and lots of instruction out there. Matter of fact, I think Mother Earth has done a couple of shows on canning meat, so we won't spend a whole lot of time on it. But In your hot pack, the meat's already pre-cooked, not all the way through, but pretty much. And you can put whatever salt and spices and stuff you want to put in it while the meat is boiling. And put those pieces of meat in hot jars until when it gets about two-thirds of the way finished, done. And then put the broth that it was cooking in, pour that over there in the jars. Don't fill them all the way up, leave it down an inch or so from the top. And kind of wiggle your meat around in there with a fork or something. Make sure there's no bubbles in it. And wipe the tops good and clean. Put your lids on them and put them in the pressure canner. The raw packing is done kind of the same way, minus the cooking. Yeah, it just takes longer to... I don't know why you would want to do this. Unless you had to, for some reason. It takes quite a bit longer to do the raw pack than it does the hot packing. So, anyway, that's you're looking at, again, several years, many years of keeping this, of keeping meat safe and you know, good to eat there. All right, let me go back and look in the chat room here and see what all is going on. We've got, let's see. there's lots of kilogram naming off some stuff. There's tons of stuff out there. That one of the things we have here in the Southwest that you don't have too much out in the on the East that I'm aware of is seagull lilies. Not seagull. Sego, S-E-G-O, and the seagull lilies grow, there's a lot of them around Farmington up there, especially up around Navajo Dam out in that area, and they've got a little bulb on the bottom of them, and they're pretty tasty. We eat quite a few of them when I was in Boy Scouts, and or the tinker's telling you how to do the whole raw pack there. All right, well, we've managed to muddle through this fairly well. Let's see if there's anything else in here I wanted to... Yeah, there's some gun stuff. We'll do it Wednesday. All right, we managed to squeeze our... kind of tease our way out of here and baffle everybody with our BS. And again, for those of you on Signal, you have to have Chrome. You cannot do it on Windows. You cannot do it on Linux. It has to be on Chrome, unless you can put Linux on Chrome. Maybe you can. I don't know. But anyway, you can get the desktop version for it. The desktop version means that you can only talk Signal to Signal. You cannot use it for any texting, regular texting. No SMS or MMS messages, only Wi-Fi Signal to Signal. But that's a very, very cool thing. So for those of you that are on Signal, check it out. It's a way to be able to text back and forth with your friends when you don't have phone service, and just if you're going through Wi-Fi. So, all right. Well, I'm babbling again, so I think we better go ahead and ease on out of here. And we'll see you Wednesday night. Thanks for joining me. Why are we having troubles here? Thanks for joining me. And about time. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. Says it all.